views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome back to Change Matters Solutions. Today is Tuesday, January 10th, second Tuesday of 2017, and we're excited to have our show continuing this year. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We've got a fascinating guest, and we've got a lot of things we're going to talk about. This is Change Matters Solutions, and I am Kenny Hendricks.
And I am Colette Williams here in sunny, southern, rainy California. And you know what I say, it never rains in California, but it is raining. And welcome to the second Tuesday of 2017. We are here, and as Ken said, we've got a great lineup for the rest of the year. We've got a great guest on this morning. Thank you for joining us, and we'd like for you to call in. We'd like for you to communicate with us. I'm going to give you those numbers, and that is 866-510-9025. That's 866-510-9025. You can also email us at changematters99 at gmail. That's changematters99 at gmail. And just so that you know, those of you who are here in sunny Southern California, Los Angeles specifically, it's raining. And I know folks are out there, and they do not know what to do because it never rains in California.
You can also leave us a message. You can also leave us a message on 214-919-5605 or send us a text to that same number. If you have any questions for the guests or ourselves, you can call that number. We're going to go ahead and get started. We've got, again, a fascinating guest. We've got a gentleman who took 23 years of his life to write this book. This is a fascinating book. I wasn't able to get through the entire thing over the weekend, but it does have some information
pages
that I think everyone would do well to listen to. Our guest is Tony Caligula. Let me give you some background on this gentleman. He holds a master's degree, Master's of Religious Education from Liberty University. He was an officer of Candidate School. Distinguished graduate of Desert Storm, combat veteran, medically retired combat engineer, army officer, a wounded warrior, United States Achievement Academy National Award winner, and a former court-appointed special advocate volunteer and a certified army chaplain with over 20 years of life coaching, counseling, public speaking, and instruction experience. So he's very, very qualified to talk about the things that he's talking about. Welcome to the show, Tony Caligula.
Tony?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yep,
we there got you. Are, yes.
Great, yeah.
There you are.
Thanks
there
for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome. Welcome, welcome. And thank you for joining us this morning with the Black Ten Commandments. And one of the things that I have to say, Ken, I'm looking at some of his reviews. And the Kirkus review that says that this is franker and forceful tone, writes with clarity and confidence. Many of his complaints and criticisms about the relationship between white and black America are valid. A tough love approach, a thorough, if extreme, proposal for making African Americans self-reliant. This is what we talk about all the time. And I think it's absolutely fantastic, it's timely, and it really says something that we have come together at this point in time, and we're having him on the show because he's talking about things that we talk about all the time, not just frequently, but all the time, and that is making change and creating solutions for ourselves to become self-reliant and not having to ask for permission to do anything. We do it ourselves. We take care of ourselves. So this is compelling, this is timely, and this is right on. So Tony, without further ado, let's get you started. Let's talk about you first, and then let's talk about what motivated you to write the book. So give us a little background, even though Ken did. Give us a little bit more in-depth background about yourself.
Certainly. Just essentially, I'm just an everyman. I'm just a regular Joe. I mean, I'm a voice crying out in the wilderness. Born again Christian, evangelical. I was born in Louisville, Kentucky, not far from Muhammad Ali, actually. I was born in 1967, raised by my grandmother. She's my legal guardian. You know, I was raised on welfare, AFDC. That's how she took care of me and everything. I spoke heavy Ebonics so bad to where black people made fun of me. So I got tired of that, so I changed the way I talked. That's why I talk the way I do now, to get a little respect, you know. I enlisted in the Army in 1985. I was served 7.5 years as enlisted. Honorably discharged in 1992, started a family, raised 2 sons. They're both in the Air Force now. And then went to Officer Candidate School in 2002, graduated in 2004, and taught my class, of course. And then I was medically retired as an Army captain in 2015. Now, that's 5 overseas tours of duty, including Desert Storm in Afghanistan. So what I've done, I've taken all those years of experience, and I've poured them into the book. And I used procedures and techniques and tactics that we use every day in the Army. And we're using them in wars, but you can also use them for everyday life. That's the thing. When I was learning this stuff, that's what was driving me crazy. I was squirming in my seat. I was like, "This is incredible. People can use this stuff." But you know, I need to get it out to them somehow, and I didn't know how to do that, of course. So, and that's where I'm at now. That's my little background.
Good.
And I want to say this one thing, Ken. Before we go any further, folks need to know that this book is on Amazon, Amazon.com, and it's very inexpensive. You need to get the book, folks. It's $9.99 on Amazon. Please get the book. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, basically what you just asked, Colette, is that what motivated you to write the book, and how did you get started, and what was the process of writing?
That's easy. I wrote the book because I was called to write the book 23 years ago. Back in the 1990s, this is how God gets you. It's always some kind of subtle thing, you know. You don't think anything about it. I was reading a magazine called Christianity Today, and there was an article called "Churches Wary of Inner City Islamic Inroads," and that was a 1994 article. And for some reason, it just captured my imagination. And I didn't know much about Muslims or anything like that, but the article was talking about how Christians were leaving the church for the mosque. And so to me, you know, that's something that alarmed me. That's something that I wanted to know more about. I didn't know anything about Muslims. So I started, I figured I'd read Malcolm X, his autobiography, as told to him by Alex Haley. I read that, and that changed my life, see. And when it was all said and done, there's a part where Malcolm X said he was a brainwashed black Christian at one point. And I concluded that's who I was as well. The difference was I didn't throw the baby out with the water. I'm still a Christian. I believe in Christ, but not Christianity. That's the difference. See, I believe in Christ, but Christianity, the stuff I read about in history, Inquisitions, Crusades, and all that type of stuff, segregation, slavery, you know, that is false. That's fake religion. That's made up religion. And I renounced it. So I'm an alternative Christian, is what I call myself. So that's what motivated me, was that article.
And I see. Okay.
So the process was, you know, I was inspired. I was just live my life, go to work, And I watch movies. I'm getting all this inspiration from many different places. And I didn't know where to put it. I didn't know where it was, what was going on until I got this thing called, what I call the Ladder Codex. I have it in the book. It's like, I was like, so what can be done to combat this migration or this exodus from Christianity to Islam? And the response I got was these are the seven things that need to be worked on. And I put that in the book. But then I took that and made it into a Black Ten Commandments.
So, again, I have not been able to get through the entire book. I was trying to read as much as I could over the weekend, but with everything I have going on, I couldn't get much. But a couple of questions. One question is, and you may have gotten to this in the book and I didn't get to that part, is what do you think is the cause for many Black people leaving the Christian church for Islam? And is that the basic thesis of the book, or what is the basic thesis of the book?
Well, no, that's just my little background. But the thesis of the book is just it's urban missions. It's an evangelical message. And it morphed into something a little more technical. And ultimately, what I'm trying to do is say that, and please, you know, I have to tell you that, you know, as you can tell in my book, I have a way of speaking that, you know, it might step on people's toes, and I'm not trying to do that. As you can see, I'm not a nasty person, but I try to be very direct. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so what I'm saying is, dreams are for those who are asleep. And talk about the dream all the time, but we don't do anything to fulfill it.
Right.
And I'm not even sure the dream is something we really want anyway, or something we should pursue. And I'll talk about that later in the book too, and I'll explain why. But ultimately, it's about changing the thinking of low-income Black people in order to improve their standard of living. The Bible says, "For as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he." Proverbs 23:7. So, what I believe is that we're just as good as white people and any other people, and the only difference is our thinking. That's our difference. Is we think differently, and it's not necessarily always a constructive way of thinking, and we need to change the way we think to be more progressive and more successful.
One of the things you did say that there's a lot of things I completely agree with, because I believe in self-reliance, was that you said, in order for us to become equals, we have to think like equals.
Exactly,
and,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
I think that that's very profound, because I think a lot of times we don't think like equals, you know.
Not at all.
I've never been in the military, but I've been in corporate America for the past 30 years. And one of the things I learned about moving ahead in corporate America is you have to do the job before you get it.
Exactly.
You know, I remember being young and wanting a promotion and wondering, you know, what needs to be done. And I went to my manager and said, what do I have to do? They said, well, you've got to act like you already have the job.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of a lesson in life. If you want to be a certain way, you have to act that certain way, you know, before you get
there. Mindset.
It's a mindset.
It's a mindset. It's a mindset.
Things will come.
And that's drilled in us in the military, is that whatever rank you are, you're supposed to know two and three levels above you, and especially as an officer. So when you're enlisted and you're a private, you should be thinking like a sergeant or learning. You know what I'm saying? You should be always be thinking to that next level up, couple levels up, and unless you don't want to progress, I guess, and then they'll eventually put you out. They don't let people slack like they did anymore, you know. So, but that's the quote. Yeah, low income Blacks must act like equals to be treated like equals. You know, and what I'm saying is that you touched on it earlier, Yolanda. You were saying like, you know, asking permission. You know, that's that bilateral thinking. We think that we need the white man's to sign off on everything, and we need his approval, and we don't.
Right. No, we don't.
We don't need him for nothing. No, actually, we don't. Not now, we don't. I mean, there was a time when we're really dependent on them. But now, in this day and age, you know, what we do is we got in the habit. It's like the plantation mentality.
Exactly.
And I talk about
that's
that
exactly
in there.
What it is. It's a plantation mentality.
And I have a little diagram in the book and everything. You know how the system was set up. You had the big house. You had the taskmaster, the white taskmaster, you had the black slave driver, and you had the field Negroes. Now, the slave driver, he was to communicate with the white taskmaster. The white taskmaster didn't necessarily deal directly with the slaves all the time. And what we have today, we have a lot of slave taskmaster, slave drivers today, black slave drivers. And that's where we get the black leader from, that type of terminology. And that gives you a clue as to how we're still set up in America. You still have the big house, right. The White House. You still have House Negroes. You still have the white taskmasters who exploit us. See, in 4 years after they're done with us. And you still have the black so-called leaders that are black slave drivers. And everyone else is down, you know. The people I'm writing to, the low-income blacks, they're the slave Negroes. You know, the field Negroes.
Right.
It's the same system. Right. You know, and I'm trying to change all that.
Right.
And I agree with
that. And there are people, there are people who would dispute that and say, no, not really. I'm not a slave. I didn't. And based on the fact that they can dispute it, says that they know it, but refuse to actually admit it. And it's not like all of these things have to be proven. It's every single day. It's every single day. It's in our faces every single day. It just takes looking, knowing, understanding. It is a mindset. You've written 500 pages of information about the black community, where we are, where we're going, why we should go, what the benefits of going are. And I'm sure as we go through this show, there will be quite a few people who will dispute it and say, no, not really, as with anything.
It's understandable. Yeah, it's understandable.
That's understandable.
Yeah.
But the truth is the truth.
Exactly. But if you notice, that's why the very first chapter of the book, knowing that, I had to establish my credibility, at least try to. The very first chapter of the book is all about statistics.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Government statistics. Not from articles someone wrote.
Right.
These are government statistics that you can go look up yourself, and they are depressing. I'm talking about
ASVAB. Those are the numbers.
You
can't dispute that.
Exactly. I just organized them, but I didn't change them. I didn't create them. They're right there for you to read. I just organized them for the reader, and there they are.
One of the things that I saw several years ago during Hurricane Katrina down in New Orleans that really, really struck me was, you know, all the people that lost their homes went down to the stadium. And I remember there was this black woman on television on the news, and, you know, the announcer said, you know, the news person said, you know, what's going on, yada, yada, yada. And the black woman said, the government told us to come down here, but then they didn't tell us what to do. Now, notwithstanding the fact that was kind of really a rare situation, but the mindset. I'm into survival, Tony. Being prepared for natural disasters, man-made disasters, etc. Those types of things. And again, I understand people living way down in the bayou a lot of times don't have the resources to do a lot of things like that. But beyond that, the mindset to think, okay, the government's going to tell me to come down here, and I'm going to wait for the government to tell me what to do next.
Tell me what to do.
I think that's a mindset across
it is
a community.
It is.
Not 100% of the people, but across our community, the mindset that we are waiting. We are waiting on permission. We are waiting on...
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It drives me crazy.
We're waiting.
So let me
drives me insane. Yeah.
If you've got any questions, if you're on the line and you want to chime in on this conversation, make sure you hit star, and our engineer, Scotty, will get your questions in. I'm sorry about that, so go ahead.
Yeah, that's one of the things that drives me bonkers, because in the military... Well, that's we don't think that way, you know. We don't wait to be told what to do. We know what to do. Our training tells us what to do. We have orders, standing orders, and we have leaders that tell, you know, direct us. We're always in motion. If something happens, we know how to respond. We drill and train all the time, exactly how to respond, you know. And everyone knows how to do it.
Right, and that's with us. We don't. One of the things that the millennials always say is be authentic. And for that phrase, be authentic, that has to mean much more than just the way the millennials think, because millennials definitely do not think the way boomers think, nor do they think the way Gen Xers think. But for millennials, being authentic means you also you become part of the fabric. You become part of the fabric of society. And in that, that also means they no longer think of the house Negro and the slave Negro. And I do remember when I was in high school especially, and also in college, that being a house Negro was absolutely the wrong thing to do and to be in the wrong mindset. And we were supposed to think in a more productive manner, not waiting for the man to tell us what to do. Go ahead.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, what it boils down to is I try to throw a lot of different things in there. Obviously, there's a lot of information. But the definition of insanity is where you keep doing the same thing but expecting different results. And that's what we've been doing for the last 50 years. This is not going to happen. Nothing's going to change until we change the tactics. It's like in the military, again, I'm going to keep going back to that because that's my mentality over 20 years is all. It's the way I think. If we keep trying to take a hill and we can't take that hill, we need to come up with a different strategy.
Right.
Try something different. So we got to embrace change and try something different. And real quick, let me say that we have what we call doctrine in the Army. And that's doctrine is the overarching philosophy of how you do stuff. And the doctrine, I was able to identify what I feel is the doctrine of the black community, was what has been our doctrine since slavery was ended. And that's Frederick Douglass. Now, I'm not bashing Frederick Douglass. I think he's a great guy. And I have problems with him telling slaves not to escape slavery after he escaped it. But it's called a Douglassonian doctrine. What he preached was a grievance platform, you know, but it was always bilateral. So what we got going on now in the black community in our paradigm is a bilateral grievance platform. That only gets you so far. We've gone as far as we can go with that. The walls have tumbled down, like I was saying to Yolanda. The walls are down. Jericho's walls are down. Now we need to come up with a different strategy to get us to the next level. And I talk about in the book is you know, Booker T. Washington. You know, everybody wants to call him an Uncle Tom and a sellout. Don't understand, he worked on a lot of different projects on the down low. He did things in secret while he was saying one thing to whites. He was funding and financing a lot of other things that he didn't talk about. He's a good dude. So the Washingtonian doctrine is what I'm offering, and that's a unilateral self-help platform. That's where we don't wait for instructions. We don't try to be inclusive with trying to get whites to help us out with stuff. We don't need coalitions. We focus on, there's a lot of things we can do for ourselves. You take the initiative, you know? And I used to be somebody who made all kinds of excuses for black people, and I don't do that anymore. I used to do that type of stuff, and I was good at it. I was good at winning arguments about, and what you do, you throw stuff on them. You talk about their people. You know, what about white people? What about this? What about that? You might win the argument, but when I start reading the statistics, the ones I list in chapter one, I was like, man, there's something going on here, and we got some serious issues we need to address. I'm being part of the problem, not part of the solution. So I stopped doing that. No, I'll never do that again. And the leadership we have. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Leadership we have today, they are good at doing that, being apologists for the things that we're doing that aren't working, and they make excuses for everything that we do wrong, and that's just not helping us at all.
One of the things I did notice you talk about, and I didn't get in depth to that part yet, was about tough love. And again, I'm in a complete agreement with a lot of things you say in that book, and I think we need to start listening to tough love. You know, you talk about the statistics, you cite statistics about the pregnancies, the unwed pregnancy rate. you know, things like that, HIV rate, STD rates and things like that, you know. And those are the types of things that and a lot of black folks didn't like it when Bill Cosby came out and said a lot of things. And some of them said it was because he aired our dirty laundry. But guess what? Our dirty laundry is out. Our dirty laundry is out there.
We need to spin out. And everybody knows it.
We do have the highest rate of teen pregnancies. We have the highest, you know, in teen pregnancies, generally, we get more teen pregnancies. Not 100% of the time. Some people are able to escape that, but that does keep people in the cycle. And exactly. Nobody can change that for us. I don't care who's president. I don't care what the white man does. I don't care if we get $1 million each reparations. That's not going to stop that sort of thing. And we have to start looking at that behavior a little bit differently, and we have to stop embracing it. Understand it. Understand why it happens, but try to do something to not embrace it and bring it to a change. And I think Scotty's got a question. Go ahead, Scotty.
Yeah, I'll hold it till after the break.
Okay, we're going to take a break right now, but we will be right back, and we've got Tony Caligula with us, and we've got more questions. And if you've got anything to talk about, just chime in with us. This is Change Matters Solutions.
I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
And welcome back. This is Change Matters Solutions. I'm Kenny Hendricks, and we are speaking with author Tony Caligula, author of the book The Black Ten Commandments, available on Amazon.com. Welcome back. As we were talking about, Tony, before we went to the break, we were talking about tough love, and I think Scotty had a question. Go ahead, Scotty, with your question.
Thank you, Ken. Tony, thank you for joining us on the network this morning. Good to hear the conversation. As Colette and Kenny were saying, that is the mantra of this program, is to talk about changes to come up with solutions. But to the point about, you made a comment about the mindset of some low-income black people. I want to talk about the mindset that you're describing. And I do agree there are far too many, not all, but far too many people in these environments who have a self-destructive mentality. So with me being in media, starting a foundation based on media, because of what Malcolm X said about the power of media being the most powerful entity on the face of the planet because it controls the minds of the masses, I have since in the past 8 years come into contact with different groups like Clear the Airways Project based in Gary, Indiana, just outside the Chicago area. And every weekend or every other weekend, they are protesting on the street. If they're not at a so-called, quote-unquote, urban radio station that may not even be owned by black people, but it's targeting black people, they will pick it outside of McDonald's and ask businesses to stop sponsoring what they call killer radio. And the reason they call it killer radio is because when you turn on that radio that's targeting those type of communities, it's all about misogyny. It's all about crime, committing crime, including murder, talking about blowing people's face off. This is what's being pumped into over the public airwaves. I'm not talking about internet. I'm not talking about, you know, subscriber-based radio like satellite. Because you can pay for obscenity. You can pay for porn. You can pay for all that. We shouldn't, our community should have certain standards, and the FCC has what's called community standards, but they're not being enforced when it comes to these radio stations. So do you agree that that's an element in what we're dealing with when we're talking about that type of mindset? It's the programming that they're taking into their spirit and psyche, and that not saying that's the total blame. There are other factors, but we've identified that as an important factor, that when you program people with killer radio, well, you're programming killers. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, I agree 100% there. You know, I talk about, first of all, when I think it's chapter two where I talk about different categories, because it always bothers me how we get lumped together all the time in the media, and they do it intentionally. You know, you got three basic groups, socioeconomic groups in every society, every people group. You got the high income, middle income, lower income. They just lump all blacks together, which is very racist. So each group thinks differently, actually. They have different values. They see the world differently. And this has been bore out in the lot of the information I put in there, the statistics and everything. But the HIBs, I call them the high-income blacks, middle-income blacks, and low-income blacks. HIBs, MIBs, and LIBs. HIBs are like the Huxtables. MIBs would be more like the Winslows, and LIBs would be more like the people from Good Times, the Evanses. So I'm trying to put things in terms to where the reader can easily grasp what I'm trying to say. So when I talk about LIBs, I'm talking about there's three subgroups of them. There's the working class LIBs, you got the welfare class LIBs, and you got the criminal class LIBs. You know, I came out of the welfare class and came out of that and grew up and moved away from that. And so, yeah, the mentality is comes from many different things, but the media is a big part of that. It does brainwash us. It does condition us, without a doubt. I even had a diagram where I break down what I call the temple of white supremacy. Yeah, I got the pillars and everything. And what I feel are all the different tentacles that it uses to maintain control. And the best way to maintain control is to control the mind. So, yeah. White supremacy uses all those different avenues. It uses children's books. It uses cartoons. It uses music. It uses libraries, museums.
And
I'm talking about all that in the book, all the things that we got to chase. It's a lot of stuff, a lot of information coming to our brains. And it starts when we're children. We start getting programmed into white supremacy as children. Yeah. And what am I saying? What I mean by that? Well, these fairy tale books we read that are read to us as children, like, you know, they seem innocent, Snow White, but what do they always take place in Europe?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Not a single black person in any of those fairy tales. And you see this played out in the movies we watch. Planet of the Apes, that's a racist movie. King Kong, totally racist.
Right.
King Kong is the black man being taken from Africa, obviously.
And I can't believe they actually made another Tarzan a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I mean, here we go again.
You've got to be freaking kidding me.
Here we go. Right. Yeah, it never ends. It just never ends.
Right. Well, you know what? I bought a table and chair set for my granddaughter over the weekend. And it's a Disney character on the top of the table. And she wanted me to get another one. And I said, well, I got this one because she could write on it. It's an activity table, and she could write on it. And she says, oh, okay. She says, well, you know what? We've got to do something different because she's 5 years old. She just turned five in November. But she already doesn't want to play with black dolls. And she says, their hair is bad. Their hair is bad. I don't want to play. Their hair is ugly. I don't want to play with
on TV.
Oh,
and
yeah, she's
all the media, yeah.
Wow.
Everything that she sees.
When Bill Cosby came out and said some things, I don't want to necessarily use the term a lot, but there were black people who did not like the Cosby Show.
Oh my God, tons of them. Yes.
I can never stand it.
They said that wasn't. You know,
they were mad. Yeah, they were mad.
That wasn't possible. Well, it was possible.
They were mad. That's right.
My argument to people to say that, the white men can't fly, but that didn't stop them from making Superman. White men
And you know what? Exactly. And you know what? Remember, Bill Cosby is the one.
The thing about it is, images make a difference. Images make a difference. Let me say it again. Images make a difference. And if you look at movies, and I'm not a big action movie guy. The reason I'm not is because I'm sick of seeing Steven Seagal and Jean-Claude Van Damme beating everybody up. They're sitting there with no gun, and there's guys
with all
these superheroes, and Steven Seagal, I'm the cook on the boat. And Sylvester Stallone, you know, I don't watch action movies because now when I do see one with somebody black there, I might watch that to get a different perspective. But for the most part, I don't watch it because I understand what those images mean and what they do, you know. And
this the damaging, the detrimental.
They are.
And they in an indirect way, they contribute to the self-hatred that we apparently have for one another. And when you hate yourself, you don't really care about killing yourself.
People that look and Spike Lee got people mad don't.
Spike Lee got mad at Quentin Tarantino for making Django Untrained. I think he's mad because he didn't make it himself. And I don't know if you've seen the movie.
Oh, sure.
Movie. I did. It was a good movie. Yeah. I thought it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. We need more movies like that.
Yeah.
Right.
So to answer the question, the media does affect us, just like the doll test is still going on today. It promotes self-hatred into ourselves, and it promotes us to devalue, dehumanize ourselves, and to devalue black life. But on the flip side is Willie Lynchism. It teaches us to esteem white life and value white life above black life, and that our only value is to serve, you know, that magic Negro theme that's in all the movies. The only reason we exist is to serve whites and to help them.
Mm-hmm,
and, you know, there's a lot of skits about that by Key and Peele. They did a skit on that.
Right.
Get your own trouble, white boy.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason I don't like football and basketball. Because when the rubber hits the road, when the black football player, basketball player, all these athletes really need to be taken care of, not be injured, they're gone. If they're not out there on that field playing ball, they're of no use. That's where they are used. Instead of us telling boys, football, basketball, that is not the end all. That is not where you need to be. Let's think about something else. And the argument is they can make money. They can get a free ride to school. They can take care of their families. They can do this. They can do that. Right. You're playing football, basketball for somebody else. You're doing that for somebody else. And what can you do for yourself and your community? That's the big thing. What can you do for yourself and your community?
Well, I guess what we're all talking about here is what we're touching on is I had to come up with a way to express it, this theme.
Right.
Everything we're talking about, this theme, what is it? And I said, and I watch a lot of TV, listen to a lot of news because you can get smarter by listening to how they talk. And pick up words and new buzzwords, and they talk about narrative a lot, a narrative. And I said, that's what it is. It's a narrative. What kind of narrative is it? So I said it's a white supremacist, Anglocentric type narrative, to where it promotes whiteness over blackness, and it promotes white life over black life. It's just a narrative. It just runs through everything in our society. All the books, all the college courses, all the so-called history, and I talk a lot about history in the book because it's a joke. The so-called history we got now is a joke. And I show you how that, which I just only learned a lot of that stuff recently, is that, you know, the days of the weeks are named after false gods. We all know that.
Right.
To the end. They're Germanic gods, right? Teutonic gods, Germanic gods, and if you trace the names of all these deities as I do in the book, you find out that they're traced back to Egyptian deities. And then you start to realize that there's something going on here, that why is it when you pick up a book on world history or world mythology, it starts always with Greek, Greco-Roman mythology, and they call it classical. What are they trying to, what's going on there? And it just before that was the black world. That's what's going on. There was a time when we ran everything. The first king of the world was a black man, Nimrod, in the Bible. So they don't want to talk about those type of things. So they covered up with the Greco-Roman line of demarcation, I'll call it. It's a line, you can't, all scholarship, all history, all textbooks, they don't go beyond that Greco-Roman line. And if they do, they make it seem as though that it grew out of the Greco-Roman culture. Which is
and see, what people need to understand is, why wouldn't they make history to benefit themselves?
I totally get it. I get it.
So yeah. we cannot sit back and expect, you know, them to teach us about our history. So, for example, I see people, and I've said this on the show before, is I've got friends, for example, on Facebook. Maybe there'll be a graduating class of, you know, 10 black kids coming out of West Point. And somebody will put the picture and say, this is fantastic. You won't see this in the media. Well, why would the media show that? There's two things. One, why would the media celebrate our successes, not theirs? And number two, we need to make it that that is not newsworthy. It's not
newsworthy. It's the norm.
When 10 white people graduate from West Point, it should not be newsworthy. But what we need to do is, in order for it to become not newsworthy, we need to celebrate it within our own community. And don't ask the question or say, you know, you're never going to see this in the media. No, you're not. No, you are not. You are not going to see positive things about us. And guess what? Mm-mm. You never will. You never will. So, and that's that permission thing. You know, so for you to sit down and think that they're going to do that, you're waiting on validation.
And that's what I'm talking about in the book, is where I'm talking about, I try to explain, you know, the why behind things. And that's what I'm going to go into real quick, is that if I touch on a few things here, I had to talk about troop leading procedures. That's how we, as leaders, as officers, that's how we move troops about. That's how we disseminate information. That's how we get things done. And then the military problem-solving process, that is the framework for the entire book. Those six steps. That's the entire framework. So I started with that process. And then I had to figure out, well, how do you go about figuring out what a problem is? What the problem? Because a lot of times we point fingers and we call things problems, but not really the problem. For example, if my car won't start, the problem isn't that the car won't start. That's a symptom of the problem. No, there's something causing the car not to stop.
Too
often we don't know how to troubleshoot.
Right.
We look at things and say, well, that's the problem. No, that's a symptom. Mm-hmm. The problem is deeper. Yeah. And that's what I'm doing in the book. And I'm trying to talk about how you got to do root cause problem solving. Before you can even do the military problem solving process, you got to know how to find problems.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And we take the shortcut. We don't want to know
exactly what
the actual problem is. We only want to deal with the symptom. We only want to deal with the symptom. We don't want to dig any deeper. We only want to go surface.
Exactly.
Surface is digging deeper is uncomfortable. And we may have to look inside. We have to look inward, and we have to take responsibility for everything. And ain't nobody going to do that. That is just not what we do.
Exactly.
It just is. Go ahead.
That's the gist of it. That's what I'm doing throughout the whole book. I'm trying to do root cause problem solving. And when it comes to human behavior, there's two environments. I break it down to two environments. And Jesus, that's why I got it from what Jesus said. He said that, you know, what comes out of a man defiles a man, not what goes into him. And, So we have the internal environment and the external environment. The external environment is your actions, society, and the world. We see that every day.
Right.
You're not going to see root causes in that environment usually. You see symptoms, but you don't see root causes. Root causes of all the problems in our society comes from the internal environment. It comes from our beliefs, our perceptions, and our thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I come up with the thesis to change, you know, to change your standard of living, you need to change your thinking. Because that is the root cause of your actions. Your thoughts control your actions. So if you want to change your behavior, you change your thoughts.
Yeah.
But what controls thoughts? Your beliefs control your thoughts.
Right.
That's what drives your thoughts. Yeah.
Back in I think it was the 80s, there was a nighttime TV drama with John Forsythe. His business was Denver Carrington. He had the blonde wife.
Dallas.
It wasn't Dallas. It was one of the other ones. I always forget the name. I was watching it one night, and he was a rich guy, and he had divorced his first wife, the dark-haired woman who's like the villain.
Right.
And he married his secretary. Dynasty.
I was about to say Dynasty.
And I was watching one night, and they had just gotten married. They had been married a few months or something like that. And the woman he married had been his secretary, and she was having a hard time adjusting to the servants in the house, because he had this, I don't know, 30,000 square foot mansion or something like that, with servants waiting hand and foot. And he came home one day, and he said, why you look depressed? She says, listen, I'm having a problem adjusting to this whole lifestyle thing. I got people running up to me every 5 minutes asking me, do I need something? It's kind of weird. And he said, look, let me tell you something about me, and I'm paraphrasing here. He said, I'm a rich guy. This is who I am. He said, if they came and took all my money tomorrow, within 12 months, I'd be a rich guy again, because that's right. Who I am.
Right.
That's who I am. And I remember listening to that, watching it, and thinking, wow, that's pretty heavy, because it works on
Linda Evans, exactly.
It works on both ends of the spectrum. People at high end of the spectrum, they think like that, and they will always be that way. People that are on the lower end, that's all they know. They are always going to be that way. That's why you can take somebody who's was raised in the hood, or even a trailer park, and when they win the lotto, they can win $5 million, $15 million in the lotto, and a couple of years,
they lose it.
You read about them being broke again, because they only know how to be broke.
Exactly. A fool and his money are soon parted. That's what that means. You guys remember that skit that Dave Chappelle did about reparations?
No, I never saw that.
Oh, it's hilarious. It's where they finally paid reparations, and they were paying off cell phones. This one guy had he bought a cigarette truck. It was crazy, man. It was pretty
a cigarette truck.
Yeah, he's like, I'm rich. That's what they get that's where they get that from that skit. It's just hilarious. You guys gotta check it out.
I'll have to YouTube that.
Yeah, but
hilarious and real.
It was also. You're thinking like you're laughing, but you're like, there's a lot of truth there, and that's what he does. He's a
there's a lot of truth in that. Yeah, a cigarette truck. If that ain't nothing.
Yeah, and they're pinning up.
And there are people that will say that's okay. It's his money. He can do whatever he wants to with.
Yeah,
Tony. I know the skit you're talking about.
Yeah.
And for the first time, I just had this thought about that skit when I watched it. But what you're saying is, and what I think that's saying is that if we got reparations, we wouldn't be prepared, because we wouldn't know how to manage the money. We'll turn around and give it right back.
Exactly. That's why a fool and his money are soon parted. This dude here, I got permission to use his the quote from his book. He's a nice guy, this white guy, Thomas C. Corley. He wrote a book called Rich Habits, The Daily Success Habits of Rich People. And he studied rich people, I forget how long it was, for years. And he realized that they think differently.
Yep, they do.
From the rest of us. They don't think like we do. They are actually have a different mindset. They interpret things differently. They have different habits. And this other brother, he wrote this book called, his name is Robert Kiyosaki, Japanese fellow.
Right.
He wrote a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Right.
What did he say? He said, poor people have poor ways. Poor people think like that. Being poor is a state of mind, he said.
Right.
Yes,
and,
it is.
And
yes,
I put that
is.
In the book, too, because I even had a chart. And I showed a chart how your average, because I'm making a lot of generalities here, obviously. The generalities, and I'm not saying every single low-income person is this way. That's what it's these three categories. But in generally speaking, they kind of think a certain way that is defeatist. It doesn't help them make money or save money. It doesn't help them get ahead in life. And these are the type of things that got to change before you can switch gears and start moving upward. How do I know? Because I did it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm speaking, when everything I'm talking about in here, I've been through it. I've lived it. I came from a welfare class, but I didn't want to stay there, man. I joined the Army. I wanted to do something. I wanted to get out of that situation, and I didn't have nothing. Didn't have a father, but I got in the military, and I worked myself up, and anybody can do that. You know, you got to change your thinking. If you keep your thinking, right. If you keep thinking poor, you'll stay poor. You know?
Exactly. And,
That's all it is. It's thinking. And we're just as good as anybody else. We're good people, you know, but it's our thinking that hurts us.
Yeah. And we are coming to the end. We start winding down. And Tony, if you'd like to give out some contact information or give any last plugs on you. But before you do that, I have one quick question. And as a matter of fact, Scotty, our engineer and our producer, is also a veteran. And both of you guys have been in the service. I want to ask this quick question because I came up, I'm a little older than you guys. I graduated from high school in 72, and I was really afraid about going to Vietnam, and a lot of us were afraid of it right about then. And so going into the military was not a good option during those times. Now, fortunately for me, the draft stopped right after I got out of high school, so I didn't have to go. But I think we may have missed a lot in our community in terms of getting some of that training from the military, you know, and I also think the military lost a lot by not allowing us to really thrive in some of those situations. But any quick thoughts on that, and then we're going to go ahead and wind this thing down.
The military has a lot to offer. We actually have a high percentage of people who serve in the military from the black community. And a lot, you know, that's not talked about a lot. But we're very patriotic, just like everyone else. And the military has a lot to offer, a lot of training. And where else can you go and get paid that much money starting out, you know, as an entry level, and get school, get free medical, get free room and board. If you marry, they'll pay for your housing. Okay. It's just a deal. It's just an incredible deal. And while you're figuring out who you are and growing and stuff, you're making money. You're going to school.
Right.
If you want to get out, you can get out. If you don't, they even got 15-year retirement plan now. Wow. 15-year retirement plan.
So any contact information or final comments on why folks should buy your book, Tony, as we wind this down?
Well, it's actually two books in one, and it's on audiobook is coming. I have a theme song for it. I'm working on a book trailer. The reason why you should buy the book is that if you are sick and tired of being sick and tired, if you want to actually bring about some change, and if you believe that you're just as good as everybody else, this book will help you to fulfill those dreams. It'll help you to get to a position to where you can actually start taking off and getting some things done in life, because you're just as good as anybody else. But it's the thinking. If we could change our thinking, get a higher standard of living. That's what it's all about.
Great. And Tony, we didn't get to all of the commandments, and I know that our listening audience, I'm sure that they are interested in hearing the Ten Commandments and what the Ten Commandments are about. So we have to have you on so that we can get back to what the Ten Commandments are and how people can live the Ten Commandments and what they can do to validate those commandments in their life. So we will have you back on. We didn't get to all of the commandments. I think we probably only got to the first one. And as Ken and I always say, an hour goes by so fast. And I mentioned that to you yesterday. It goes by
it
so
sure
fast.
Does. Sure does. Yeah.
But we want to have you back on so that we can dialogue about the Ten Commandments and what those commandments mean to the black community. That's really important. So thank you very much for being our guest this morning. We greatly appreciate it, and you speak our language, and we have to continue this. We do have to continue this. So before we go, before I let you go your way today, later on, I'm gonna find out when you can be back on the show.
Sounds good.
Ken, anything? Great.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay, and thank you very much, everyone. Thank you for being with us. And remember, we are Change Matters. And I am Colette Williams in sunny Southern California. Thank you for being with us. And before I let you go, I'd like to also remind you that First Class Real Estate and Apartment Locators are based in Dallas, Texas. serving all areas of the Dallas Metroplex, specializing in residential and commercial real estate, as well as apartment locators. We are your one-stop shop for all your real estate needs. Allow us to bring your real estate to a whole new level. And remember, why fly in coach when you can fly first class with only the best? Your first-class real estate professional, Jocelyn Bagby, is waiting to assist. And remember, call Jocelyn Bagby at First Class Real Estate at 682-888-8417. That's 682-888-8417. Take care.
Thanks, all. We're signing off.